Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is David and I am an alcoholic. As far as housekeeping goes, we will be recording and publishing only the audio portion of this meeting. You'll also be able to sign up for email on our website. I put a link in the chat for simpleactions.net if you'd like to, you know, receive announcements for events we've got coming up, which we actually have one coming up. And there's links to the seven tradition as well. We'll talk about that later. That is all the housekeeping I intend to offer. For those who care to join us, feel free to unmute and we'll have a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God,
yeah.
Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. All right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to welcome all in attendance today. Is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? Is there anybody new? We'd just like to welcome you by first name. You have the ability to unmute. All righty. Momotomo, would you read the preamble, please?
Sure. Morgan, I'm an alcoholic. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, sir. All right, the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight, you got a 3-for-1 deal in this meeting. We're going to be covering steps 5, 6, and 7. I'll have a triple. Please help me welcome our panel this evening. We've got Mark H. and Donald S. coming to share tonight. So thank you guys for coming. I will put a reading up on the screen. We're not going to read you to death, but I'm going to just open the meeting with a paragraph from the book, and then we'll invite Mark to kick us off. So tonight, step 5 says, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our wrongs. Step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Step 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. So we'll start the reading tonight on page 72. Having made our personal inventory, what should we do about it? We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. We have admitted certain defects. We have ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We have put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory. Now these are about to be cast out. This requires action on our part, which, when completed, will mean that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being, the exact nature of our defects. This brings us to the 5th step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. This is perhaps difficult, especially discussing our defects with another person. We think we have done well enough admitting these things to ourselves. There is doubt about that. In actual practice, we usually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. Many of us thought it necessary to go much further. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The best reason is first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they got drunk. Having persevered with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory, all right, but hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else their life story. Mark, would you kick us off tonight?
Okay, my name is Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, bud.
I have a sponsor. You know, this is my sponsor. I sponsor people. My home group is Candlelight. My sobriety date is November 24th, 2015. So I got a little bit of time under my belt. Step five here, the personal inventory and talking about it. I gotta back up to four, you know, because it leads me into five. And four for me came down to the first time around, I'm full of myself. I'm still brand new. And finally, somebody was going to look at all the things that I said were going on in the world and tell me how right I was about all of them. That's the attitude I approached that with. So then it came down to, do I want to tell this guy this kind of stuff? And I had to step back and think about it. Me drunk, sitting at the bar, things have been said that should have never been said out in public. And I'm going to balk at telling the one guy who's offered to help save my life at his kitchen table. When I put it in that perspective, it was like, okay, yeah, I can go tell him all this stuff because I was right anyway. All right? He's just going to see how right I was and tell me how right I was. And I did that. And as I was going through the inventory list and each line item, he had a strange way of kind of pointing out I had a part in some of that stuff. And my part wasn't always a perfect part. Most of the time, it wasn't perfect at all. As I went through each one of those items, you know, he kept pointing out my part in it. And I started accepting some of that, but not wholeheartedly. But I was new and I didn't know any better. I'm just trying to get through this process. And then, let's see, the God part about it. I spent the majority of my life as an atheist, although I actually never said I was. People just told me I was based on my behaviors. By the time I came to AA, I had realized I wasn't truly atheist. I just didn't care. God stay on his side of the street, I stay on my side of the street, we don't have to bother each other. So the idea of admitting this to God, when I was talking to that sponsor, I kind of put that in that I don't care part because I was still learning spirituality. I was still learning to accept that there was a God out there that I could do business with. So at that time, I put it on the back burner and kept going. Now, the first sponsor, he passed away. I got a new sponsor. He is my co-panelist. We started at step one and we read the book and got through the process again. And this time, I got a deeper understanding of the book because I got a little more time in the book. I'm listening more carefully to the sponsor. And, you know, I wrote out the stuff again, not expecting, you know, to be justified, just, you know, I'm following the steps as required. And this time when I wrote it out, I acknowledged that, you know, there was bad behaviors there. And it was on my part, not their parts. And when I was reading it to Donald, my current sponsor, I accepted that it was God involved in my life at that point in time, because at that point in time, I was three, four years into it. And there's some type of God in my life, which I believe in, I do business with on a daily basis. And so I accepted that he was in the room with me and I was reading. And then it just struck me as I was reading this, how bad of, not a bad person, it was just like how bad I was. Not quite how I said it, but it just struck me different this time because the whole process was different this time because I was deeper into it, had a better understanding of what I was doing. And it had a more profound effect on me when I was through with it. And I felt the difference this time. I think that's about all I got to say on it.
Thanks, Mark. Donald?
I'm Donald Smith, alcoholic. And I'm going to say hello to all my friends out there. I haven't seen a lot of you in a long time. And a lot of you on this thing. I mean, it just surprises me how many people I haven't seen. And it's good to see all of you. My home group is the Westgate Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Wednesday night. My sobriety date is October 17th, 1994. And so I look at this in two ways. It's, you know, the first way is like, whenever I do a fifth step or when I listen to a fifth step, I always say, just shut up and read. Because that's about all I can do. But I think it's an attitude thing for me that I have to remember when I'm starting it and when I'm continuing on in my sobriety with this. And it's very difficult for me sometimes to remember this part. Let me back up a minute and say I was exposed to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1985, I think it was. I was put into a treatment center down in Florida. And they said, we want you to write your inventory. And I thought they wanted to hear my story. So I was all excited about it because I had all this great stuff I had done, all this fun I had. I was going to tell everybody about it. I was going to stand up and tell everybody. And so that's about all I got out of it. Because when I did, I wrote it down and then I read it to everybody. And no one was as excited about it as I was. I said, did you get kicked off all of the commune for being drunk? No, but that wasn't the whole point of it. But I totally missed it because I'm, I have that egotism and lack of humility that it talks about later on in this little reading. I'm just kind of in my own mind doing what I want to do and I'm getting out of it. And I didn't really want to do it anyway because I was trying to keep my job. So I obviously didn't last long in sobriety. When I got out of the treatment center, I was gone. I was back drinking in about 90 days. And I didn't stop drinking and didn't get sober for another 9 years. And I drank every single day. It was horrendous. I ended up losing everything I had, everything. So when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew that God was in this thing and I didn't want to do that. That higher power thing was something that weak people and whatever, those people do that stuff. I don't have to do that. But when I got here, I knew if I was going to quit drinking, that's what I was going to have to do. So when we went through the book the first time through, the first thing that popped out at me and which was pointed out to me is that it says on page 72 that after we had done our inventory, which is a 4-column inventory, some people say 5 because you can put your defects of character on and make a fifth list. So you got, you know, you have what it was, who did it, who done it to you, what it was they done, how'd you feel about it, what was your part in it, and then what your defects are on the side, which you think you have as you write out the fifth column. But that's a dispute people have all the time. Not all the time, but I hear it. Any event. So I got this list, and I don't know what to do with it, right? So it says here that we have put our finger on personal, on our weak points, our weak items. That sounds great. That's a lot better than defects, right? It's my weak item. I feel kind of good about that. But it says, these are about to be cast out. So whenever when I did this the first time, that I was, when people say that they are working on their defects of character, they haven't actually read the book or done what the book says. Because you're not working on nothing. All I'm doing is finding out what this is that is causing me this problem, and I'm going to ask God to cast it out. I don't have to worry about working on it, right? Which was a surprise to me. I think that's why people say that they're grateful they're alcoholics. You know, I'm a grateful alcoholic. I don't have to go lay on a couch and work out my defects of character with somebody I don't know, some shrink, right? I get to ask God to remove them, and what goes, goes. But that's further in the reading, sorry. But the other way I look at this as well is that, you know, what do I do on a daily basis? The 12th step says I work these principles in all of my affairs. And that includes this one. I can't tell you, I had a sponsor who had passed away years ago, a few years ago, and he used to tell, ask me all the time, Donald, have you written inventory? Oh yeah, I've written inventory, all right. All right, well, have you read it to anybody? Well, no, I haven't. Well, then what good has it done you? We practice these principles and all these principles in all our affairs. We do it all of it. And it goes back to this. In practice, we actually find a solitary self-appraisal insufficient. That's true when I go through the first time. It's true when I go through 26 years later and I need to do, solitary self-appraisal is of no use to anyone. Particularly me, I should say, not anyone, I should say me. It's no use to me. And the reason I think, my own personal opinion, is, you know, and this is not in the book, so it's kind of a spacey thing, right? But the word spirit means breath. The Latin word is breath. So when you're speaking your defects of character and talking about, you're actually doing a spiritual thing by speaking. I always kind of, you know, my thing is that, you know, the body has all these organs that gets rid of all this waste. But my experience is some of the crap I put in my head is still there if I don't talk about it and don't get it out. So I've got all this crap in my head. And if I don't, and that's, I think that's why they do psychoanalysis and that's why they have confession, because it's not anything new. It's just something's been around forever. That's why you communicate to somebody about what it is you're doing and why you've done it or what you think it is. What is the nature of it? But as a drunk, I don't talk to anybody. It's, you know, that's the other thing about this step. It's about communication. It's learning how to be honest with somebody. And also it's learning how to understand that I am the big part of the problem. That in any kind of relationship, it takes two, not just one. And so that's kind of my, I kind of look at it like that. But like I said earlier, whenever I listened to somebody, whenever I did this with somebody, they just said, read it. And then I said, well, I get it. He goes, did you get everything? Well, I think so. I say, well, they, you know what to do next, right? Okay. So I go home and I do what's next. So this part is more to me, why do I have to do this? And it says right here at the very, it says right here, if we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. And I know for me, that's absolutely the case. And I can also say with assurance that it's kept me sober all these years, being able not, you know, because down here, it, maybe we haven't got that. Oh yeah, it's the next reading. I'll wait. So the other thing real quickly is this. I just love this part. I have not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty. And the first time through this, I hadn't learned it. The second time I hadn't learned it. After 5 years, I hadn't learned it. Because what happens? The alcoholic ego that I have, this thing that is fueled by alcoholism, just pops back up out of nowhere and starts running the show. And I can think all day long that I'm doing God's will. I mean, that's my favorite thing. I'm doing God's will. God damn it, I said a prayer and I got God's will. So I'm going to go do it. But I'm frequently wrong. And I don't want to admit that to someone. And I don't want to look at it. But what happens is that the more I do that, the more I learn about humility, the more I learn about fearlessness. I mean, come on. I am, you know, I didn't realize I had so much fear in me, but I had a lot of it. It blew my mind. And being honest and learning how to communicate those things to other people is very important for me. It's taught me how to be of service to other people. It's taught me how just to not be afraid of stuff and tell somebody the truth. You know, I mean, I lived my whole life, you know, to me, telling the truth was like, that was kind of stupid, don't you think? Why would I do that? And even to the point, if I told a story, embellishment was always better than the actual thing. You know, I called it embellishment, but it was a lie, right? And it's all because of my ego. It's all because of my pride. It's those four things that I did, that I found out who I was, you know, the nature of the problem when I did what is, you know, my honesty, self, whatever those four things are. I can't remember. Anyway, you know, I were in writing the inventory. So those are the things that I find necessary in my life. And then the other thing I'll tell you is this. I always use this last line here whenever I work with somebody. It says, tell them all their stories. So my thing is, when I work with somebody, I always tell them, all right, well, we got now, is there anything that you left out of your inventory that you haven't told anybody? We want to hear that. This is the take it to the grave line here, until you told someone your entire life story. I have not heard anything that's crazy, although most people think they've done, and I haven't done anything that's crazy, although I can tell you when I was doing this, I thought for sure I had done something crazy. So there's a lot more coming, but thank you very much again. And it's so great to see everybody here. Even the people that won't turn their cameras on. Thank you.
Thank you, Donald. That was awesome. You guys are great. We're off to a roaring start here, kids. We're going to continue on page 73. More than most people, the alcoholic leads a double life. He is very much the actor. To the outer world, he presents his stage character. This is the one he likes his fellows to see. He wants to enjoy a certain reputation, but knows in his heart he doesn't deserve it. The inconsistency is made worse by the things he does on his sprees. Coming to his senses, he is revolted at certain episodes he vaguely remembers. These memories are a nightmare. He trembles to think someone might have observed him. As fast as he can, he pushes these memories far inside himself. He hopes they will never see the light of day. He is under constant fear and tension. That makes for more drinking. Mark?
So I didn't know I was leading a double life. I mean, from if you sit back and look at everything I was doing, clearly I was leading double and triple lives. But in the middle of it, I couldn't see it. I was just leading my life as I saw my life was supposed to go. I lived by my own unique moral standards, which, you know, don't fit into a happy marriage or anything else for that matter, right? But what I find is, you know, with that fifth step, there comes freedom. And that freedom is identifying all these defects that I have in my personality, my behaviors, and all the things I do, you know, just in life in general. But I was always, you know, had this image put forth that, you know, I had everything together. You know, because I had a whole bunch of stuff, and all that stuff was always coming around because I had this empty hole in my body that I was always trying to fill with stuff, you know, new car, new house, new this, new that. What I found is this inventory process. The first time I kind of did inventory was when I was in the rehab. And after about a week in the rehab, maybe 3 days of no liquor in my body, I start crying. And I'm walking around here, grown men, a bunch of kids, crying like little babies, not running. And when I finally can't take it no more, I go to the counselors and I tell them, and they say, go write about it. And I'm like, why the hell would I be in front of you if I knew what it was, you know? But it's like, get a pencil and paper and sit there until you write something. And I think about, you know, one of the stories I hear about Bill when he was trying to write the How It Works chapter. You just pencil the paper and then it just started flowing on its own. And voila, 30 minutes later, you had How It Works written. Well, I sat in my bed that day and I wrote like a 3-page letter to my son who passed away in 2012. And then when I was done doing that, all the crime went away. And then, you know, the next morning I went to the counselors and I told them, hey, I wrote something. I'm not crying no more. Thanks for the suggestion. They're like, you need to read it to the group. I'm thinking, that wasn't what you asked me to do. But I was in the rehab. I had nothing better to do. So I read it to them and I cried my way through it. But when I was done, I felt weights lifted off. Each time I did that inventory, the first and second time, I felt weights lifted off. The weights that I didn't know were on me, but I felt them come off me. And then I start feeling like this, I'm starting to feel this God-like power enter in my life. I don't really understand it, but the things are different. And I start trying to live an honest life. I start trying to live a life where there's no duplicity, there's no cheating, there's no lying, all these defects of character that pop up that, you know, again, make me an impossible husband to live with, an impossible father to be with, an impossible friend, because it was all about, you know, satisfying my needs. And when I get through all that stuff, you know, the inconsistencies about my life go away because I'm no longer doing, you know, shady stuff all over the place. And that's because, you know, I got to sit down and look at myself every night, you know, through that inventory process, you know, the nightly inventories. And life gets easier as I do that. You know, I'm not presenting something, I'm just me. Sometimes I'm a little more than me when I should be, and people comment on that. And it makes me sit back and go, okay, maybe I'm slipping back in some old character defects. And so I got to go back and look at what I was doing and keep moving forward. But I'm no longer under any kind of, I didn't realize I was under fear. That realization came in sobriety. I knew I was under tension because I was doing stuff I shouldn't have been doing. But, you know, amazingly that goes away. And the drink, it's just a magic elixir that I never had to think about since I came into this fellowship. When I talk to the guys I sponsor, you know, what I kind of emphasize is the freedom that comes from exposing all those secrets, exposing all the things you think are so horrendous that you cannot tell anybody. And one of my favorite sayings is, if it's got a name, somebody's already done it. You are not unique. And then once we've done that stuff, we start, you know, looking at a God that we understand, I understand, and trying to, you know, write my life in the way I think that God would like me to live. Ideally, I just try and follow the steps and the principles of the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. So my life continues to be easier and continues, you know, to have more and more freedom in it. And that's, you know, letting that God come in my life and do business there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Donald?
Thank you, Mark. I never thought I had a double life. I never thought that at all. I was the type of person that I would, you know, everybody knew I was a drunk. I didn't hide it from anybody. I kept bottles in my desk at work. Every place I went out, I always used to wear a black sports coat. So I would put the pint bottles, I put half pints in my coat pocket. But then when I had to go up to full pints, the coat kind of shifted. So I had to put another pint in this pocket so that it wouldn't shift. So I was set to go. So, I mean, I did that every place I went. I was living in St. Louis, and every place I went, that's what I did. I mean, you know. When I wore that coat. Now, I didn't wear that coat every place I went, so I should say that. But having said all that, I did absolutely, I mean, I can't tell you. I believed in the bottom of my heart that my stage character was what you wanted to see. It didn't protect me at all. It was that you wanted to see that part of me. That's they, you know, I wanted you to, I was a fun loving, going out, having a good time, doing whatever I wanted to do kind of guy. And that's what I, and that's what I did. And a lot of times, and I'll be honest with you, you know, I didn't really care if people saw what I was doing. It just didn't bother me all that much. I've been called a low-grade psychopath because of that, but I'm just, you know, it's just a, that's just a term. I mean, I don't have a clue. But there were lots of things I did that I just didn't let people know about. And so that's always true, I think. But having said all of that, I had a guy that I sponsored that was he was a graduate of Harvard, got a master's degree in the University of Arizona, had a lot of money, very, very smart. And he loved this paragraph. It was him to a T. And it was such him to a T that he couldn't get honest with who he was. He couldn't get humble with who he was. And he ended up going back out and drinking and dying in Colorado because of it. So I'm just, you know, my experience is that people, you know, live this. And what I try to do today is I try not to live in a stage character. I try to be who I am at all times when I'm around everybody, and I try to be as honest and open as I can. And it says right here, you know, the problem is that if I live in constant fear and tension, that makes for more drinking. That says to me, that's the pathway to a relapse. Whenever I'm feeling that kind of thing, and here's the other thing. I don't know about you all. I'm assuming you've been around for a while, right? Most of you, that somehow living without fear and tension is a wonderful thing. I'm used to it. I love it. So why do I want to go through my life not feeling that way? Once I get the benefits of that, I really want to learn how not to do that. And how do I not do that? I practice the principles in my affair. I write inventory when I feel tension and fear. I see who I am, and then I talk about that to other people. I don't act this certain way, like I, you know, whatever it is. So that to me is a pathway. So I know when I'm starting to go down the wrong road, or I'm starting, not the wrong road, that's not the right way to put it. When I'm going down a road that I shouldn't be going down, how's that? I know what I have to do in order to right the ship. You know, the internal gyroscope is very, very important to me. And having said that, I think that's all I got.
Thank you. Thank you both. Oops. We're gonna continue on page 75. When we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We have a written inventory and we are prepared for a long talk. We explain to our partner what we are about to do and why we have to do it. He should realize that we are engaged upon a life and death errand. Most people approached in this way will be glad to help. They will be honored by our confidence. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Mark? Can you unmute?
All right, I'm sorry. I thought I clicked that button.
It's all good, thank you.
You know, the first time I heard that life and death thing, I was doing the fellowship, and I didn't take it serious because there was no death that I knew of, you know, alcoholically. But you know, my son died from, but I wasn't thinking about it like that. Now that I've been in the fellowship for a while and seeing people who can't get it and they go back out and some of them have passed away, you know, I understand that what we're doing really is a life and death thing, you know, and that was a eye-opening thing when I had that realization. But, you know, when you decide who to hear your story, I carry a meeting to the Navy Rehab every Thursday for years now. And this is one of the things that I give them my opinion on, and I make clear to them I'm giving them my opinion. Because they got to be, I explain they need to be careful when they choose a sponsor. And I always suggest, make sure you choose somebody who's talking about the big book. Because I'm a big fan of the big book. You know, like I tell them, I believe in the big book the same way church people believe in the Bible. Then the next thing is, what is that guy talking about before and after the meeting? You know, if he's out there, you know, giving the latest stories of his sponsees, I'm like, you should run. Because what you're doing is you're about to eventually get to the step where you're going to tell this guy some intimate stuff, you know, some humiliating stuff, some maybe criminal stuff, you know. You don't know what it is, and if you know he's already out there standing in front of me talking about what his last sponsee did, then he'll be out there with yours. Again, I make it clear I'm giving my opinion when I tell those guys that. But I also believe that part of the process of getting through from steps 1 to 4 and 5 is we're taking the time to get to know each other, where I can decide as a sponsee, if I can trust this person enough to tell all this information to, because I know at this point in time, anything that I withhold or anything that somebody is withholding is a potential point that may drive them back out drinking. So I'm firm on you've got to get somebody that you can trust, that you can get this information out to. Once you've gotten to that point where you can trust this guy and put the information out there. But the other thing is, I'm giving my opinion again, but you know, I'm not fond of people who need to tell you how many people are sponsored, because at that point in time, it's all about my ego and not what I'm trying to, you know, help myself and somebody else. Anyway, off my opinion stuff. When I had these talks with these the kids, and I call them kids at SART, I think some of them get it. Some of them, you know, don't know they're alcoholics and don't even care to find out what they're alcoholics. But the ones that know it, they listen intently, and they go out. And I've seen some of them with the sponsors since they've left the rehab. So I think it's critical that, you know, we take the time to get to know somebody so we can trust them to put that information out there too. Now, part of this thing is, you know, at some point in time in the past, I'm full of myself. I think I know everything and can do everything. Why do I need to tell somebody this information? You know, again, it goes back to, these are the things that potentially I've been drinking over and don't even know that I'm drinking over this stuff. And I need to be able to sit down with somebody and talk through this stuff. When I do that, you know, again, life gets easier, and that freedom that was promised to us in those 9-step promises just is flood into our lives as we continue to do this stuff on a regular basis. And oh man, I'm about to go on the 9-step promises. I want to do that. But after I've done all this stuff and I've laid it out, and I've asked my higher power to take away these character defects, these shortcomings that are in my life, again, I feel weights lifted off me. I feel more freedom in my life. Finally, I feel freedom to be honest with the woman I'm married to, because I'm no longer doing those character defect things. And life gets simpler for me. Life gets simpler for the people around me as my life goes from being chaos, tension, and fear, to just being a normal everyday life, nothing special about it, just normal everyday life, right? It was all the foolishness in the past that kept my life in chaos. Then over time, I keep developing this relationship with this higher power, this God. And again, I wasn't comfortable saying God, you know, in the beginning. I was a higher power guy for a long time. And then, you know, I'm comfortable saying God now. I say it a lot, although it feels funny sometimes saying it, right? Because I'm still growing into it. And I like the idea that I can continue growing into it versus thinking I got this. And so I get to keep looking at myself and growing into this higher power, and my life keeps getting easier. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Donald.
I'm going to make this quick. And so everybody should run away because I'm usually go long. I'm just teasing. I kind of want to get to six and seven. So I'm just going to be very brief about this little part. What I always do when I'm sponsoring people, I ask them these questions. Do you know why you're here and why you have to do this? And if they don't know, we got to have a talk, because by now they should have. I mean, you know, so. And then I'm telling them I am honored. You know, it's not, you know, the book says that we are given the opportunity to save somebody. What's that part? It's in the family afterwards, that we're able to save someone from misery and death. That is, I mean, God gave us that opportunity. We didn't earn it. We were given that opportunity as recovered alcoholics, and I was, and I don't know why I was, but I was, and I want to make sure I remember that. I am honored when someone asks me to listen to their I just tell them, I'm honored. Thank you. Just shut up and read. So any event, real quickly, the last paragraph didn't really happen to me when I did the fifth step. But I will say it started that process, because 6 and 7 is when I had my spiritual awakening. That was what did it. But going through this process and getting to that 7th step prayer is what just boom, when it actually happened. I've always said I've had spiritual experiences up until I was about 11 years sober, 7 or 12 years sober. And then I had a spiritual awakening. So I thought I had awakenings, but they were just experiences. God was preparing the way for me to get to where I ended up getting. And it blew my mind when it happened. So having said that, I did feel like I was on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. But that actually happened after step 7. And so having said all of that, I will pass. Thank you.
Thank you both so much. All right. We're going to continue now on page 75. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he take them all, every one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing. Mark?
So the first time I did this, I honestly don't remember if my first sponsor told me to go home and carefully review everything. I'm quite sure he did. I'm quite sure I didn't, right? Second time around, I explicitly remember, you know, Donald telling me to go home and do this, and I remember doing this, right? And it's the first time I did as I was told in that respect. And I looked back at everything and I thought, yes, I've done all these things. I've worked all these things from day one to the renewing of the step process with Donald. Then, you know, it came back to, am I ready to do 6 and 7? This the first time I was just, you know, doing what I was told. You know, this time, the second time around, yeah, I felt it. I felt I was ready to do these things. I was ready to have, you know, anything that was left in me, you know, to give it up, to move to a new way of living. And I think I was already on that path, but it accelerated at that point in time, the second time around. And I choose, well, let me not say I choose. I make sure that I don't do any of my old behaviors or anything that could be construed as egoism. And when I do, I make a point of making it right with somebody. Because to me, one step back into the, any character defect, any old behavior is a minor step off the path, but it can lead to a great detour if I don't correct it immediately. And hopefully, you know, I'm living every day in accordance with the way the big book has asked me to live, the way the steps and the principles ask me to live, so that, you know, I don't take those detours or steps off the path that Bill has so graciously built for us in his writings. When and so I don't really have much else to say on that one. Sorry.
It's okay. Thanks, Mark. Donald? It looks like he just took a picture.
There he goes. I only thought I had unmuted myself. All right. Well, this part, this part is like the best part of doing step 5, I thought. I got a chance to go through this whole process, and then I got home and I reviewed what I had done and realized what was happening and why it was important for me to do all of this. My life I had a script that my life was, and it was completely out of whack with who I really was. And I had no idea about it, and I got a chance to reflect on that. And then it says, if you don't know the stones in place, that's what the stones referring to, page 56 and 62, the cornerstone and the keystone. And then the mortar and the sand is the first step of recovery. Here's the thing. I got invited once a while back to go someplace and do a workshop on 6 and 7. So they did the whole workshop on 6 and 7. And there are only two paragraphs in the big book about it. So a lot of this came from people who, if you read the 12 and 12, people like to go to the big book and then they go through the 12 and 12, but go to 6 and 7 and read that, because there's a lot in there about it. I really do think that this is the more important one rather than what's in the 12 and 12. And the reason is because, you know, my whole life from this point forward, I am always ready to have God remove anything that's objectionable. That is my attitude towards my life and what I'm doing. I have to find what it is. It's the where I live today. Any place that's objectionable. Well, what does that mean? Whatever's happening to me is causing me fear and tension. Whenever I'm feeling resentful, whenever I'm afraid, whenever I'm being dishonest, whenever I'm being selfish, those things cause these problems. And I have to live in this step. I have to remember who I am and what got me to this point. And that is true. Let me tell you, I get up every morning and remind myself who I really am. You know, it is just incredible. So step 6 is like really one of the most important steps for me, the way I live my life today in the book, because it tells me, it gives me the attitude that I have to go through my life being ready at all times to have God remove anything that's objectionable. And I get to remind myself in the morning, you know, this quiet place that you do after you do step 5, you can do that in the morning. You get up and you ask yourself these questions in the morning. Is my work solid so far? Did I do my inventory last night? Is there something I need to take care of today? Do I remember what the foundation of this is, that I'm an alcoholic and that I'm a hopeless alcoholic? I can't keep myself from drinking. I can't keep myself from alcoholism. I'm going crazy. I'm naturally nuts, which I thought was a good thing when I was drinking. I thought it was great being crazy. Now, then I went through a phase where I said, I got mad because I was crazy. And I wanted, I said, well, why am I mad? My whole life I wanted to be different. Now that I am, I'm mad about it. What kind of crazy shit is that? Stuff is that, excuse me. So in any event, this part is, I'll be quiet and we'll get to step seven and we can talk about a little bit more. I'm sorry. Thanks.
That's awesome. Thank you. All right. Our final paragraph for the evening on page 76. When ready, we say something like this. My creator, I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. We have then completed step seven. Mark.
So, six is like getting me ready to do seven, right? And then seven is, it was just like with my sponsors, I just walk them through five, six, and seven and let them know how important it is that we just continue working on developing this relationship. And some people, including me in the beginning, were like, well, I don't believe in this prayer, like this stuff. But I have come to believe in it because I see it works in my life. And so I just have to let the people I sponsor know and the people I talk to about this stuff know that, just do it. The way you say it is kind of optional. The intent behind it is what really matters. And over time, the feeling and the knowledge of what's coming will become more ingrained in my mind and in my heart, and helps me continue to develop that spiritual connection that every day I'm working on making sure that I have, because it's a good feeling, right? That's all I got.
All right, take us home, Donald.
That's funny, Mark. I mean, that's funny, Dan, because I'm already home. Y'all don't have far to go. All right. Well, this is it. I can't say enough about this prayer in my life. And I like this prayer so much, it's incorporated in my daily and my morning prayers. I say it every morning. To break it down a little bit, it says that I want God to have all of me, the good and the bad. Goes back to, I was a philosophy major in college. So, I was already screwed up from the beginning. So the good and bad is a big deal. I mean, that's a really big deal. And here's the thing, it's bad, and I'm going to give it to them. Doesn't mean that it's anything, but it's like, it's not good, That's an amazing thing. It says, remove every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and others. And it was pointed out to me that some of this stuff, I know you all have probably heard this 100 times, so you're going to hear it 101 times, that sometimes some of this, my defects help you to grow spiritually. So they get to stay with me, and I get to learn how to live with those things so that you can get closer to your sponsor and to God, or get closer to a bottle of booze, whichever you think is going to fix your problem. And I get a chance to live with being a human being, with having faults, with having defects, with not doing everything right, and not having to be on the stage and acting like I'm doing this and doing, I'm out all this. I am none of those. I am just who I am. I'm an imperfect person. And I love that I'm imperfect today. I didn't think I ever could would be able to say that. But doing this has caused me to realize that if I, you know, what's the opposite of being perfect? I would be God, right? And clearly I'm not that. So it says my usefulness. So it just means that every part of me, the good and the bad, is all useful in some way or another to a power greater than myself. And that is a wonderful message that I can live with in my life. And that's what I try to help people get to today. You know, when we work the steps out of the book, we don't go through them in like a week. We read the book, and when we get to a place, we stop and we just take our time to do it. We get through it. So to me, I'm ready when I get to this point. And the last thing I'll say is this. It says, grant me the strength to go out here to do your bidding. All right. If you know, that ties right in with the 11th step where I'm asking God to give me the power to carry out his will. Strength and power are the same thing. I don't have the ability to do any of this. I can't work the steps by myself. I can't work the steps without God in my life giving me the strength to do it. All this stuff is about me understanding who I really am and what I'm capable. It's like we did the serenity prayer this morning. The difference between what I know I can do and what I know I can change and who I am. And let me tell you, I'll do this quick. Most of you all know me. I tell you the same damn thing every time. I was in the middle of depression. I got out of it by working this step. And when I got to this part, this is where God lifted that from me, and I never went back to it. Now, I understand that people don't like hearing that sometimes, because it's going to, you know, some people need to go see shrinks. I got that. I've had people that I've had to tell them to go see people. But most of the time, you're suffering from untreated alcoholism. And if you would just work the steps, this stuff would go away. And it worked in my life that way. And when it happened, I had this incredible awakening. It just blew my mind. It took me a long time to do it because I'm a hard-headed, self-centered, just crazy man. If you can't tell that already, I was even worse a while back. So doing this is just, it just helped me so, it just, and I can't tell you, I just want to give this to other people, but there's a process we have to go through to get here. And so many people don't want to do that. They want the quick route. They want to talk to the nice person. They want to talk to the person that's the most popular and do all this shit that they do, what stuff that they do. And they don't ever want to really get sober. And really getting sober is what this is about. You can't give away what you don't have. These two steps literally changed my life. Well, actually, 4, 5, 6, and 7, when I did them in a row and did exactly what I was supposed to, change my life totally. And I was 12 years sober when it happened. I was getting ready to drink. And boom, it changed. And I'm just telling you that don't ever give up, because the answers are not in the book. The questions are in the book. The answers are in you. So thank you.
Oh, that's brilliant. All right. Everybody's going to get a chance to thank Mark and Donald again after the Lord's Prayer. Thank you guys so much. That was amazing. I'm going to put up a QR code here, and we'll do a little business. The seventh tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. And if you missed the QR codes, there are links in the chat as well. So I'll take that down. And I believe, let me get back to my format here. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any announcements tonight for the good of AA? Donald.
Can I make one qualification, one little change in what I just said?
You're not crazy. You're not a crazy person.
Yes, I wanted to say this real quick because the answers are in you because God is in you. That's where it says the answer's found deep inside. That's what I was trying to get to. I didn't mean to say that you were the person with the answers. You got God deep inside of you, and to pull this out is you got to get down there and find it. So that's what I wanted to say. That's my announcement. And you know, I'm sorry if I ran over my time, but
oh, you're fine. Thank you. And thank you for the qualification. I could listen to both of you guys all night. I got two quick announcements. The Virginia Area Assembly is meeting in Newport News on April 1st, 2nd, and 3rd. Please have your GSRs show up there. It's also important to know that you as an AA member are welcome at the Virginia Area Assembly. Even if you don't have a vote, your voice is encouraged. You can participate in the discussions. Please feel free to show up. More information on aavirginia.org. And I'm going to share this really quick because your email box is going to fill up with this in a little while, and we're going to start announcing it at meetings. But this group is going to planning on coming back in person and hybrid on Monday, May 9th with a supper and a speaker. We've got Chris W. from Carrollton, Virginia, past delegate. We got a 6 p.m. potluck. Potluck means bring something. Yo, bring some food, man. And then we'll have a 7 o'clock speaker, and that's going to be at the Ghent United Methodist Church on Raleigh Avenue. And all are welcome to attend that. Anybody else think of an announcement? All right. Grant, would you read the last two paragraphs on page 164, please?
Be happy to. I'm Grant. I'm an alcoholic. A vision for you, Big Book, page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you for letting me read.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all for coming out to participate tonight and take your time to be with us. And how about we all virtually circle up and hold hands and actually say the Lord's Prayer together. Everyone is free to unmute and we can have a nice static-filled, confusing reverb moment of silence. Our Father,
who art in heaven,
hallowed be thy name.
Thy kingdom come,
thy will be done,
on earth as it is in heaven.
Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, As we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Forever and ever.
Amen. Woohoo! Thank you guys so much. That was fantastic.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you
so much. Good to see you guys.
Fantastic.
Thanks for letting me ramble.
Thanks, Donald. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, guys.
BJ, good seeing you.
You too, Mark. It's fantastic to see y'all and to hear your message.
Good to see y'all.